being strong enough to speak your truth, being strong enough to walk into a room and know this is who you are and not feel like you have to hide or cover any part that makes you unique. So celebrate everything that makes you who you are.
Welcome to Fit Food Junkies, Addicted to Health. My name is Emily E, and I'm a certified group fitness instructor and personal trainer. We will not only talk about fitness, nutrition, and business, but also explore how to build a strong mindset, have ultimate motivation, and how to reach your breakthrough in life. Let's start on our health and fitness journey together.
Jason Collins is an American former professional basketball player who was a center for 13 seasons in the NBA. Collins was selected by the Houston Rockets as the 18th overall pick in the 2001 NBA draft. He played for several NBA teams, including the Boston Celtics and the Brooklyn Nets. After the 2012 to 2013 NBA season concluded, Collins publicly came out as gay. Later, he signed with the Nets and became the second openly gay athlete to play in any of the major professional sports leagues in the U.S. and Canada. He made history in 2013 as the first openly gay athlete to play in the NBA. In April 2014, Collins was featured on the cover of Times Magazine as the 100 most influential people in the world. Jason, welcome.
Thank you. It's fun to be here.
You're like nodding your head as I'm saying that. You're like, yeah, that's right. That's me. That's me.
I did that.
Oh my gosh. Welcome.
Thank you.
It is such a privilege to have you on my podcast. It really is. You are such an inspiring person. And I'm just so excited to chat with you today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And it's so funny how this all came about.
It's just hilarious.
United Airlines.
Shout out United. Yeah. I mean, it really is crazy that opportunities aren't always knocking on your door. And the craziest thing is it happened right in front of me. And I was like, well, I'm taking this opportunity. We met at LAX.
It's in the security line.
And you want to hear something funny? Is I always run late to my flights. Like, I'm always that person that's like running in the airport. They're calling my name. So the fact that I actually was early one day and then met you, it was meant to be.
And the flight was like a little bit delayed. I do remember that time. The flight was a little
slow.
Everything was working for you that day.
It was just in my favor. So it really did happen for a reason. Also, the fact that you're 7 feet tall, I mean, I was like, oh, I know that guy. So crazy. The funny thing is you're half LA, half Austin, and yeah. I am too, and it's such a small world. We're from the same area. Our high schools, even from the Valley, we're close to each other. Yeah. It's just wild.
Shout out to San Fernando Valley.
Shout out San Fernando Valley. Sometimes I kind of hide that I'm from there here because they're like, you're another Californian making all of the prices go up. I'm like, I'm not from here. Just kidding. I'm not from LA. It's hilarious.
How did you come to Austin? What was your move story?
You know, I didn't even realize that I was a part of this transplant whole community during COVID. I visited one time when USC played UT when I was in college, and I loved it. Yeah. And during COVID, I just felt the need to move out of LA, explore a new city, been there my whole life. Yeah. People here are so nice and genuine. Mm-hmm. I just love the city, love the people, and I wanted to explore a new city. And awesome. Here I am.
Awesome.
What about you?
So my partner, his name is Brunson Green, and he moved here shortly after he went to college. And so he's been here in Austin since the late 90s. And in Travis Heights.
Oh, cool.
So not too far from whole South Congress area, actually pretty walking distance. And then he convinced his sister and her family to move from Seattle here. And now they're now in Tarrytown, and we are there all the time hanging out with them. And then recently he convinced his parents, who currently live in Jackson, Mississippi, to buy a house, and they're going to move here soon too.
Oh, so, nice! Austin, recruiting everyone.
He's recruiting people. Yeah, all over to come to Austin.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Everyone in Austin is like, no one else coming to the city.
No, it's a great city.
It is a great city. I absolutely love it. Yeah. How did you guys meet?
We met at a pre Emmy, well, okay, first. We, the first time that we met was at a housewarming party, but I met, and this was shortly after I came out, the Sports Illustrated article happened in May 2013, so that would have been in June 2013. We met at a mutual friend's housewarming party, but I met like 50 people that night, and you kind of remember, but then a few months later, in September, late September 2013, met again at a pre-Emmy party in Los Angeles and started dating shortly after.
This was history.
Yeah.
Let's get into it. You are the most interesting person, inspiring person. So you're a defender at heart. Your performance has portrayed such defensive toughness. Every team that you've played for, you consistently enhance the defensive unit when you were on the court.
Yeah.
And most people focus on the three stats. They focus on points, rebounds, and assists. But your main value add was being a lockdown defender.
Yes.
Can you talk about this philosophy of doing the dirty work? And it's not as highly valued, right? But at the end of the day, it wins the game.
I think every team, sports team, or even in real life, off the court, in not just professional athletics, but whether any team environment, you need people who are solid role players and who will accept the role and then star in that role,
mm-hmm.
which isn't necessarily the biggest, glitziest. Yes, you just meant, points and rebounds, assists, like those are the big things, but every team needs glue guys or people who will do the dirty work, as you said. and I took pride in shutting down whoever I was guarding and then also being able to help my teammates. And that was my role on the majority of the teams that I was on. Earlier on in my career, or not even career, but playing basketball in high school and college, yes, I was a person who was shooting the ball every single time, just about, with my twin brother. But as you move on in your career in the sport of basketball, you're playing with such talented individuals and future Hall of Famers, and they can shoot the ball a lot better than I can. So I was like, okay, let me figure out another way I can help the team win. Let me go set a screen and get that guy open, or let me go do all the other things. And that was me. Yeah.
And do you think the NBA kind of overlooks?
Oh, no. I think general managers and people who know the sport of basketball know the value of having people like that on your team, and know that, okay, this person might not score, 10 points a game, but they will, if you give them a game plan, they will be able to execute the game plan. And then if you tell them, okay, I need you in this spot at this time, they will be there. So there's a lot of trust that's built up between the coaching staff, your coaches, and your teammates. They really do value, the good teams really do value, having people like that on your team.
Yeah. I was told I was good on defense when I used to play with my brother, but I don't think I can get on your level. I don't think I'd make it last 2 seconds.
it's funny. I have a twin brother, like I said, and he has a 13-year-old. Well, actually, no, she just turned 14. So 14-year-old, 11-year-old, and a 10-year-old. The two oldest are girls. And the middle one in particular, she is usually the only girl playing on the basketball court against boys. And I tell her, it doesn't matter, go kick their butt kind of thing.
Yeah, go get it.
and know that especially at this level, when someone is right-handed, guess which way they're going to dribble? They're going to go there. So there's ways that you can anticipate and you can stop and you can take away their first and second option. And a lot of people, and this is the same at whatever level, whether it's youth basketball to even professional basketball, make someone beat you with their third best move. So take away their first two. You know what's usually going to happen. And if they beat you with their third or fourth best move, then that's too good. And that's sports and that's life. But at the same time, you've made it difficult on them. So
do you ever coach?
I do not. I don't know how to coach. I help my niece and nephew basketball team every now and then.
There you go.
I do step in. I was an assistant coach for one of their youth teams. But my brother, he's the coach. He's won multiple world championships with the Golden State Warriors, and he's now an assistant coach with the New Orleans Pelicans. And I'm very proud of him. And I see all that goes into that. I can definitely. When I see my nieces and nephew, I go to their games, I will definitely give my input to some, you know, to some of the coaches and like, hey, you know, but I try to, you know, everybody, you know, has their roles and, you know, boundaries and all that. So I make sure not to overstep, but but at the same time, those coaches are looking for advice sometimes, and they do need, especially when you have expertise and you've been around the game as long as I have. Usually when I'm offering advice or my expertise on a play, a situation, usually it's because it's needed.
And tell me also about the grit and grind playing on defense, because you have to have that mental toughness. Mm-hmm. You've absolutely killed it on defense. But that has to translate on the court and off the court with that grit and grind aspect. What are some things that you practice every day, whether it's now or before, to be able to have that toughness when you step on that court?
Well, you have to have balance in your life. I think that because sometimes if you are, you know, so sometimes you can be too driven and too hyper-focused, and you have to find ways to have those moments where you have balance. And so for me, it was, you can't train just basketball, you know, the whole year, you know, 365, you can't do that. It would be very difficult to do that.
Right.
So you have to find ways that, you know, you can cross train, maybe like spinning.
Yeah, I'm making him take my spin class.
Yes. Which I love spinning now. We're out, you know, Austin, another great part about Austin, so many great outdoor activities, outdoor sports. So you're still staying physically active, but at the same time, you're not necessarily inside a gym the whole time. You're getting, you know, some good sun. So going for a trail run or even playing another sport like tennis or something like that can definitely help you, you know, find balance in life. And also, you know, making sure that you know, you're hanging out with your friends and family and, you know, making time for that as well. So that when you are on the basketball court, it reminds you why you are doing what you're doing, why you are sacrificing so much, because you have all these people in this great support system and all these people that you love, and you want to be able to create a better life for not only yourself, but for them as well.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like the balance aspect, you're really trying to not get burned out.
Yes, definitely.
You're balancing that side. So when you're on the court, you're 200% in. Yes. Balance is something that I've tried to reach my whole life. I mean, other than those kind of aspects of trying to do different activities and being with your family, on the mental side, what are some ways that people can practice balance every day?
Well, taking time for yourself, and whether it's so funny, like I just bought another plug for Apple, not that they need it.
But I know, right? Did you see Tim Cook with the flag at the end of the F1 race?
No, I didn't.
He was waving the flag at the end. It was hilarious.
I saw a few celebrities there at F1. I saw Shaq and I saw Serena Williams.
Yeah, I saw Serena Williams.
Yeah. Yeah, she looked phenomenal. Yeah. I was like, are you really retired? Because you look like you still...
You get back into the game. Yeah,
like, I don't know if she's retired, you know. But yeah, so I was talking about that, the watch is like, when I wake up in the morning or even as I'm getting ready for bed, I don't know how it does, but it like chimes. It's like, take time for mindfulness, like a little reminder. And I'm like, I will. Thank you, iWatch, Siri, or whoever, whatever I call you now. But, you know, making sure that you have those moments where you're able to focus and just, you know, focus on your mind and your body, what's going on, checking in with your mind and with your body. And then also, when there is a problem, as there are usually with professional sports, is making sure that you're getting treatment, whether it's, you know, a twisted ankle or something sprained. It's so funny. Brunson, my partner, you know, he was talking the other day about his foot was hurting him. And I said, well, have you been icing it? And he's like, I was like, no, like this is like making sure that, you know, you're checking in with yourself, you're listening to yourself, and then you're treating yourself in a good way, and then like taking care of and not just letting things sort of, you know, linger and nag. And, you know, that's sort of how, you know, things, little things can become big things. So making sure that you're addressing whatever issue is going on.
Yeah, I'm that person that gets hurt and I'm like, I'll be fine, runs on it, regrets it in 2 seconds. But I need to listen to that balance side of things.
Yes.
What was kind of your ritual before games to increase that mental toughness?
Oh, gosh. So before a game, I always loved going over the scouting report, making sure I knew. Again, it goes back to me trying to take away my opponent's best, their favorite two moves. So going over the scouting report of not only just the person that I'm going up against, but I like to know about every single person on the opposite team, because you never know when you might have to guard them in an emergency situation. And then you're like, oh, well, I don't, like, what is this person going to do kind of thing.
Right,
like,
right.
So it was actually easier, especially the longer I played in the NBA, it was easier for me to go up against the veterans, because humans are, you know, creatures of habit, and they all, you know, so, but when I went up against a rookie or someone that there wasn't a lot of tape or something to scout, it was almost like, well, what? It was like, wait, how do I handle this situation?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And then it goes back to, okay, what hand are they? Right hand, left hand? Okay, we're taking away that hand. I'd like to see. But so it's interesting. There are some players who are right handed who love to go left. And actually, one is playing the Pelicans right now, Luka Doncic. He loves going to his left hand so that he can get to a step back jumper. And it's sort of like a rhythm. And that's something else that especially professional athletes have, is they like to get into a rhythm. And usually it's footwork, it's timing, it's all of that. So my job as the defender is to disrupt that rhythm.
Mm.
So whether that is by jumping on one side or the other, or, you know, we do play a contact sport, so you can hit them. Obviously, you don't want to foul. But sometimes you do have to foul, and I actually did lead the NBA in fouls one year. but there are ways that you have to disrupt the rhythm of your opponent.
Before, is that something you thought about, kind of studying it in your head? Was that some sort of a ritual that you had before games?
Yeah, before a game, it was, yeah, going into it, like seeing, okay, and mentally visualizing, okay, if I'm guarding this person, this situation, this is what I'm going to do kind of thing. And then also, what else did I do? As I got older, I like to get a quick workout in. It was like
Before
the game.
Wow.
I would do a core workout.
Okay.
And I truly believe this, as if you're in whatever sport, the stronger you are, usually the easier it is for you to do your sport. And especially if you have core strength.
Hmm.
You don't necessarily need to have the biggest shoulders and bicep. You know, that looks good, you know. But
yeah.
At the same time, you really need to work on core strength. Because if you have a very strong core, it's just easier for you to move your body in space, but then also to move other people. And without fouling them in space kind of thing. So
I always talk about that in my classes too, about core strength, because it is the foundation of your stability, of your movements, of your power.
Definitely.
And also even for older people, if you fall, like your stems from your core.
Yeah.
I think in just all ages and any kind of movements, anything in life, everything's in your core.
Definitely. So yeah, before the game, I actually would do a core workout. I had a good routine.
You have to show this core workout to me
after. It wasn't just abs too. Like for me, like some people like think core is abs. And it's like, no, it's like the whole.
It's like your breath too, right?
Yes. I remember when, this was after my rookie year, and my agent said, hey, I want to introduce you to a new trainer. I want you to incorporate this new program into your training. And it was yoga. This is back in 2002. And me, fresh out of college, like doing all like yoga, like what the heck is this kind of thing? And then you're doing it,
I've just been playing defense all my life.
Yeah.
What are you asking me to do?
Exactly. I was just, you know, getting hit by Shaq, and now you got me out here doing, you know, all these poses and everything. But it helped me so much. It really did. And that's a way to strengthen yourself without weights necessarily, because you're just using your own body pretty much for your strength. But it helps in so much. So that's something that for all the athletes out there and people who consider themselves, you know, just want to be physically active, is, you know, and you don't need to be like crazy. I don't need you to do handstands or headstands.
That's me. I'm always doing a headstand
yeah,
somewhere.
Yeah. but we could just do start with like some hip openers, and it'll help.
And it prevents injury too.
Yes,
it really does.
Definitely.
We're talking about that balance aspect. Was there a word or a sentence, an affirmation that you told yourself every day before games to make sure you're in the right mindset?
No, it was just be aggressive. And that's the one cool thing about contact sports is that usually aggression is awarded on the court. Now, make sure, though, when you step off the court, like, you're okay, go back, smile.
Get away from Jason. Because
my dad kept telling me, you still have your game face on kind of thing. And it's like, okay, yeah, you're right. All right, you're right. But I tell that to my nieces all the time. That's part of the thing about, like, go kick their butt is, like, it's okay. Like, when you step on the court, when you cross that line, it's okay. Mm. Be aggressive. Like, make the ref make a call on you. And because if you keep playing hard, and especially if the team is super aggressive, the referees will adjust, adjust the whistle and will be a little bit more lenient with you because that's just your style of game is being physical kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they don't feel like blowing the whistle every single time kind of thing.
Yeah. No, I like that. Being aggressive. And that translates to really all forms of life before your game face on for anything.
Yeah. When it's time for get down to business, put the game face on. Let's go.
Put your Jason game face on. I'm going to think about that next time. I love that. You also went to Stanford.
I did.
You went there for all 4 years, which is very rare as a professional athlete.
Yeah. I got hurt my first 2 years. So my freshman year, I had 2 knee surgeries, so there goes that. but you learn a different role because I came in, came into my freshman year as a McDonald's All-American, which is the highest honor in all of high school basketball. Also, a Parade All-American, and all of this. So I was expecting to have a really good freshman year. And then when you have 2 knee surgeries, especially on the same knee, it's like, ooh, this isn't good.
It's not a good one.
Yeah. But you learn how to support your teammates and try to, you still want to be a part of the team. And the team, ultimately, that team went to the Final Four. And I was there on the sidelines cheering them on and trying to yell and see if a screen is coming or somebody goes back door, I'm yelling out. So just trying to stay active in the game. And then my sophomore year, my second year, I had a major wrist dislocation.
Ooh.
You can see the scar here.
I can see it.
So there are 8 bones in your wrist. 7 of mine moved out of position.
Oh, my gosh.
I was going up for a dunk, and a guard came in and took my legs out from under me. And I put my hand down to brace my fall, and then I ended up going to the emergency room. And it was interesting that in the emergency room, the doctor has the x-ray up. He looks at me and he says, just wait right here. And goes to get all the other doctors in the emergency room and brings them back in. Is like, hey, look at this. You won't see this. This is very rare kind of thing. And I'm just like, what does this mean?
You're going to use this in a study or something.
Yeah. So that was 6 months of rehabilitation to get back out on the court. So my first 2 years were gone. So my junior year was basically to show the world, the basketball world, that I could still play and that I could stay healthy for a season.
I mean, that's so impressive after all your injuries.
Yeah. And I got through that by relying on my support system. My family was absolutely incredible. And then my senior year, so got through junior year, had a good year. And then, senior year, state, to prove to everybody. And then by the end, I was shooting 3-pointers and it didn't matter. I was having fun. Yeah.
Maybe that bone placement, that readjustment,
got back into it. But I still have a plate and 2 screws in this wrist that will be with me forever. I also have, from another injury, this is a freak golf cart accident where
I gotta have a better story.
Now, unfortunately, this is a lesson in life. If you're in a golf cart, try to drive and drive slowly. And if you're a passenger in a golf cart and the person is driving like a maniac, t- tell them to stop and just get out and walk because my brother was acting like an absolute idiot that day and flipped the golf cart and I had to have emergency surgery for a torn triceps tendon. So I have a screw in here in my right elbow that will be with me as well for the rest of my life.
Oh yeah. My gosh.
I've forgiven my brother for that, but I was definitely upset with him after that.
I would be too, especially like you're trying to get back in the game. This is not the place.
One happened about a month before training camp. So I was in the NBA when that happened. But yeah, that was no fun.
Sure,
yeah.
Coach was happy about that one.
You know what's funny? The coach at the time, Randy Whitman, God bless his God, he had his own freak golf cart story. So he was kind of like, Jason, say no more. I get it. Because what happened was, for his story, he was sitting in a golf cart, but sort of like you can dangle your foot sort of outside the golf cart. And he wasn't really paying. He was looking off to his right. And another driver lost control of their golf cart and came slamming into him and broke his leg. Like his leg was sort of just caught outside the golf cart and just...
I didn't know golf was a contact sport.
This was not supposed to happen, but... Because he had that, he could relate to me being the passenger in a car. He was very cool about it.
That's crazy. Yeah. Well, no more injuries, okay?
I know. We're going to try on that. Knock on wood.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Well, as the G League has developed recently, do you regret the going to school all 4 years?
Oh, no.
Are you happy you did? What skills did you develop through that time?
Well, yeah, I did go to Stanford. I did graduate.
I mean, hell yeah. That's an amazing school.
No
regrets, but, you know, it's very uncommon to see that in the NBA.
Yeah, there are a few Stanford, players in the NBA right now. But no, I do not regret it at all. I absolutely love the path. And it's interesting with all the decisions and everything that's happened to me in life, whether it's Stanford or going, I think I truly do believe that everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. And I'm extremely, especially the friendships. I think that's the biggest takeaway. I mean, yes, there's a great education, but above all else, it's about the people.
Mm.
And it's about those friendships that you have. And to this day, I'm on a text change, text message chain with some Stanford buddies. And then we have the Stanford men's basketball. It's not just my year, but it's basically every single Stanford men's basketball player is on a WhatsApp group chain as well. And we're, talking to each other and supporting each other. And it's like networking and talking trash. And it's being there for each other, all wrapped into one kind of thing. And that community, I wouldn't, give that up for the world.
And the skills, I'm sure that you learned there were invaluable.
I had obviously great professors, great classes, but the most important class that I ever took at Stanford didn't involve pencils and papers or laptops or anything like that. It was a class called Group Communication. Had a class around maybe 40 people. You walk into this room. It's not like a typical college room classroom where there's like a professor at the bottom and chairs going up. Everyone, it's equal. It's very flat and there are no chairs. Sometimes there were chairs, but it was usually in a circle. And you would talk, and this is why it's called group communication, but you would talk to people about issues that usually divide us. Whether it's race, religion, gender, socioeconomic, you name it.
Hmm.
And you come to understand, and we talked about everybody has a suitcase with some sort of issues. Usually sometimes some other people might call it baggage. But like you call everybody has a suitcase. And in that suitcase, we're carrying around stuff that we've been taught. Some of it is correct. Some of it isn't correct. But when you're talking with other people about these issues, you're going to find that there are common threads, which I guess has helped me so much in my life because I feel like I can interact with anyone as long as I have a good heart.
Right.
But if you can sort of see people I guess that's sort of like how we met. It's just like I could see that there's some, like, there's just something like, ooh, like she's cool. She's interesting.
Thanks.
Like,
what a compliment coming from you.
We have those connections.
The energy.
That energy. Yeah. So it, and it's just finding ways to communicate and connect with people, and it brings people together, kind of thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to, especially now, because I took this class in, gosh, 1999 or 2000, and our country has changed so much, where even more so, where it's just so much divide and so much division. And I think people really do need to realize that, you know, all of us have this suitcase, but there are so many common threads that connect us, and we don't need to go to different camps. Like, we can step towards each other and try to find, you know, this common ground for how to communicate and respect and, you know, and treat everyone, you know, equitably.
Yeah. I'm a big energy person. Yeah. Like, it's, I really feel people's energy. You could tell in 2 seconds, you know, if you're like, I'm not going to click with that person. So I love that idea of energy. I'm going to do a couple rapid fire questions before we get into my favorite part of learning about you.
Okay.
Ready? Rapid fire. Let's hit it. Biggest trash talker on the court.
Gosh, biggest trash talker on the court would have been Gary Payton. He's he's a little bit older than me, but I did. There was some crossover. But yeah, he's just legendary. Well, then also, wait, no, I take that back. Someone who I played a majority of my career against, Kevin Garnett. Kevin Garnett, biggest trash talker. Yeah.
Love it. Top three hardest players to guard.
Shaq, Yao Ming. And so I always had to guard, like, the bigger centers, and Tim Duncan. Yeah. Shaq, Yao Ming, and Tim Duncan.
Hell yeah. And I know you're 7 feet tall. I saw you kind of ducking in the door as we came in.
Yes.
How tough is it to fly on planes?
Thankfully, I've done well. So I usually get to fly in the front, but it is, I can't sit. I physically cannot sit. I am just too big to sit in most seats on an airline. It's just,
it's hard.
No, yeah, I'm like, yeah, 7 feet, you know, a gentle 300 pounds, give or take.
Gentle giant.
So it's but, you know, I make an adjustment.
Who would you rather play with, Richard Jefferson or Jason Kidd?
They're both great. They're both my boys, but J Kidd is in the Hall of Fame and Richard is not. Sorry, RJ.
A little diss out there. I'm just kidding. You played with 6 teams. Which coach was the most inspiring to you and why?
Doc Rivers. Because Doc would tell us stories that would help us grow as a human being, about leadership, accountability, about traits that make you not just a better basketball player, a better teammate, but just a better person overall. So I think Doc did the best at that, in addition to teaching the X and O's and being a, you know, one heck of a coach.
Mm, so inspiring. What do you think was the most surprising aspect of playing in the NBA?
So I guess the most surprising aspect, it's a surprise, but then at the same time, if you've watched professional sports, you know that it ultimately is going to happen, is when your home crowd boos you. Like, because in high school, that doesn't happen. In college, that doesn't, it never happened. But at the professional level, it happens. Like, if you're not performing well,
like, what?
The fans.
I thought we were homies here.
You're our home crowd and you're booing us. Yeah. But I mean, granted, we weren't playing well, but I remember being early on in my career, I was playing for the New Jersey Nets, and across the Hudson, this guy was playing for the Yankees named Derek Jeter. Pretty good baseball player. Pretty, Hall of Fame, future Hall of Famer. And he was going through a hitting slump. And I remember watching the fans at Yankee Stadium boo Derek Jeter when he was going through this hitting slump. And I was thinking to myself, this is freaking Derek Jeter, like Hall of Famer. Like, why are you people booing him? And I get it that he's struggling at the plate, but come on. But then it was like, okay, if they can boo Derek Jeter, they could boo anybody. Like, you're like the home fans, yeah. So that was like a huge surprise to me. But, you know, I get it. But at the same time, it's like most of the time, 90 to 99% of the time, the athletes are really trying. Like, it's not like he's not going up there like thinking, like, I'm really going to miss now, yeah. kind of thing. Like, you know, have some patience, I guess. But, you know, if they, you know, repeatedly keep putting out a bad product, I guess.
You really got to be your own fan, you know?
Yeah. I would not boo if I'm the home crowd. Like, unless someone is, you know, completely dogging it. But, you know, you don't boo them.
Don't boo them. Yeah, no.
Try to stay positive as much as you can.
And what would you say is one downside of playing in the NBA?
It's not a downside to me. It's just an adjustment. And there are so many good things that come from having fame and you know, having a platform. But at times, especially when you reach a certain level, like, you can't go grocery shopping. Like, you can't sometimes be a normal person when you reach a certain level. I never got there, thankfully, you know, because it's sort of like I have a platform, but I never reached like Beyonce. Like, Beyonce can't go to Whole Foods. like kind of thinks a lot. Like,
I mean, hey, it depends who you're talking to. I think you're up there.
No. But I think there are certain people once you reach a certain status, and that's, you know, I think that's kind of sad because, like, you miss sort of like being normal, kind of, or not normal, but just you know, being able to go grocery shopping at Whole Foods.
Makes sense.
Shout out Whole Foods. We
got some sponsors, you know, here.
Yeah. Who else do I need to give a shout out to?
I know, right?
Who are these sponsors?
Let's keep it going.
Name drop these.
Let's keep it going.
Yes, let's do it.
Let's go. Fit Food Junkies. We'll give all the sponsors. Well, you embody such confidence and perseverance. And you made history in 2013 as the first openly gay athlete to play in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And you work to make sports a better place for LGBTQ athletes. Tell me why you came out and what was the reasoning behind that?
So I came out because I've reached a point where I had already come out privately to a lot of my family and friends, close friends. I already had their love and support. And I just got tired of not telling the truth. I got tired of hiding. I got tired of having that stress because you really do wear a mask and, like, try to hide who you are, kind of thing. And I just got tired of all of it. I was like, okay, I'm ready to come out. I'm ready to step forward and say, hey, you know, yes, I'm gay and I can still play in the NBA. And I was able to do that.
And on Sports Illustrated, I'm a 34-year-old NBA center. I'm black and I'm gay. And you just blatantly said it.
Yes. Just put it out there.
Like, this is me.
Yes, definitely.
But I really think you shattered the stereotype of pro sports. You changed the conversation of the gay stereotype. You come out at this as this aggressive, tough guy on the court, right? Mm-hmm. And you really rewrote that stereotype that don't put me in a box. I could be whoever I want. Yeah. And you changed the conversation. How do you think you affected the world of sports by coming out?
Well, I think I gave that next young kid, maybe collegiate kid or high school kid, someone else to look up at and say, they did it, I can do it. Sort of that, whatever, possibility model, role model, something, so that the next person who comes out, be it whatever sport, it's a little bit easier. And that's very true of me because of athletes who came before me, in particular, female athletes. The playbook for male athletes was you wait until a couple years after you're retired and then you come out, but I didn't want to do that. And women have been doing this for decades as far as, you know, coming out. Some were forced out. But the act of coming out helped me, and in particular, Billie Jean King and Martina Navratilova, huge idols of mine and people that I look up to.
She was saying you're going to save a kid's life one day.
Potentially. That's something that
it's true, though.
President Obama said to me in the the day that my story came out. This is, yeah, just casually.
Subtle flex.
Yeah. But he said, you know, congratulations, but your actions today will have a positive impact on someone you might not ever meet. So
just got the chills.
Yeah. And I think that's what I think everyone should strive for, is that, you know, having a positive impact on someone that you might not necessarily ever meet. So.
Wow. And so that's kind of your why.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely my why. Definitely my why that I do everything is to try to, you know, it's like the big why. And then on the small why is for my, you know, bringing home to your family. Like, I want to leave the world a better place for my nieces and nephew.
That's so beautiful. And you got praise from Barack Obama, Michelle Obama. Kobe tweeted at you. Yeah. And you got so much amazing praise from your audience. Did you get pushback as well?
Yeah, there's always going to be the haters. There's always going to be
the booers in the audience.
Those folk. But thankfully, they were all online towards me. No one to my face.
Say it to my face.
Only one person. I should say. I take that back. There was one player who did say something inappropriate to my face. But he was an idiot.
Hope you won that game.
Oh, definitely won the game. And definitely, he said it at a free throw. And I was just thinking to myself, does this dude not know that we're playing a contact sport? Like, that I can get you back
on the court? I'm 7 feet, 255 pounds.
Yes, I could hit you pretty hard. And, but yes, we definitely won that game. But he's an idiot anyway.
So yeah,
But there's always going to be the haters. And one of the people I got to meet, and just I feel like she and her husband, Dennis. So Judy Shepherd and Dennis Shepherd, I just feel like they're like America's parents. Their son, Matthew Shepherd, was killed in 1998 when I was a sophomore. And it was a huge national story. And I remember being a college kid and seeing another college kid, you know, murdered for being gay. but something that Judy said to me was, Jason, you just keep living your life. You let the haters hate. And the best way to get back is, you know, you thriving. Just, you know, just so to those people that have those haters, you know, sometimes you feel the need that you have to respond every single time, and it can turn into a game of whack-a-mole where you hit one here and then another one will pop up over here. And then what does that become? That becomes you wasting your energy kind of, or just, you know, using energy that doesn't necessarily need to go towards that. Go towards you thriving and you succeeding and everything that, you know, put that energy towards achieving your goals. And then know that your success is going to really piss them off, kind of thing.
So that's kind of your strategy of not caring what people think, is just focusing on your own success.
Yeah, yeah. And if you feel you need to respond, you know, you can't go ahead. I'm not going to stop
that aggression.
Yeah, but just know that, you know, you can take that energy and just put it towards your success. Put it towards something positive. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that can translate into any aspect of people going through hard times. Is there something else that you'd tell that person that's going through a really hard time?
Rely on your support system. Those people that uplift you and keep you strong. And in the LGBTQ community, we have a saying, there's the family that you have and the family that you choose to have. And because sometimes those family members by blood may not be there for you, but you're going to find like a new family, like your friend, like people who will be more than just friends, but they will be like your new family, and they will be there to support you, uplift you, keep you in a positive headspace and talk to you about whatever. And like, so that you can vent or you can go through it. But, you know, rely on that support system. Know that you are not going through this. And there are resources online, great organizations out there. Another organization that was founded actually in 1998, Trevor Project, suicide prevention hotline. But there are all kinds of organizations that are available online and resources available. Please, you know, use, as my mom says, the Google.
Use the Google
and try to find your community. And If you're a member of the LGBTQ community, in most bigger cities, there are centers that might be available to you that have resources to help you find that new family that will, you know, keep you on the positive, uplifting track.
I think you're spot on. And also with the Matthew Shepard story, that's why you wore the number
98.
Number 98.
Yeah, for that year, 1998. Yeah. That's, for me, when I first picked that, that was sort of like a hiding in plain sight kind of thing. Because I didn't tell the Celtics why I chose. I was playing for the Celtics when I picked that number. And then also the Washington Wizards. And I didn't tell them why I was wearing that jersey number. But it was sort of hiding in plain sight because of the year 1998. Yeah, Matthew Shepard and Trevor Project. It was a huge year for the LGBTQ community.
I learned that. That was like your way of coming out secretly, and then you actually did. And that's amazing that you did that. Mm-hmm. What was it like coming out to your twin brother?
Funny. Because he had no clue. Like, there were some family members.
There's no twin telepathy.
We usually do have twin telepathy. But on this one, no, he was, you know, completely clueless in the dark. Because I did have other family members. I have an uncle. I have an aunt. And in particular, I remember my uncle said, "Oh, I've known you were gay since you were 5. And I was like, "Really?" Like, okay, thanks, Uncle
thanks
Mark.
Thanks for telling me.
But he was like, "Oh, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to be that uncle. I'm not." He was like, "But I..." So, like... but anyways, my brother did not know. So he was just... like, dismayed, I'll use that word. And he didn't know what his wife, and I should have told him and his wife, because they're college sweethearts, and I should have told them together at the same time. But I told her about 2 hours later, and my brother was, she was at the doctor's office that morning, which is why I didn't tell her. So after her doctor's appointment, I told her to come over to my house. My brother came over. And then I told her, and then she was just crying, so supportive and just absolutely amazing and, like, hugging, tears, the whole thing. And, like, we love you. And then I said to my brother, like, this is what your response should have been kind of thing. You know, sort of like just like, like, what's that? But, I love my brother. He's such a huge ally now. And I'm so proud of the person that he's become.
Mm. Yeah. I love that so much. And you also held back a little bit from coming out because you had such loyalty to your team. You didn't want to get distracted.
I didn't want to come out during the season. We made a decision to wait in that 2012-2013 season. I told my agent in February of 2013. This is right after I got traded from the Celtics to the Wizards, to the Washington, D.C. team. And we made a decision to wait until after that season was over, as opposed to coming out immediately when I got traded. And part of the reason why I told my agent at the time is because when you get traded, it's like going to a new job and, you know, walking into a room. Where are you from?
Right.
Oh, are you dating anyone? Are you married? Are you single? And just so I just got tired of telling that lie. I was very comfortable in Boston and I just, like, reached a point where I told my agent that I want to come out publicly. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of telling this lie, telling the story, this lie. I call it a CIA cover story. And he said, okay, you know, and he was the one who came up with the plan. And
at the right point.
Yes. And we're going to go through Sports Illustrated. We're going to wait until the season's over.
I get that. And at this point, were you still in a relationship? I know you had a fiance for about 8 years, a woman.
Yes. So I was dating her up until 2000. We were supposed to get married 2009.
I thought she was a basketball player at Stanford.
She was a basketball player at Stanford. We're supposed to get married in August of 2009. I called off the wedding in July of 2009.
But she didn't know why at that time.
She did not know why at that point. And I know people, and I have met people since then who didn't call off the wedding and would get married and then be in these relationships.
Be in hiding, honestly.
Yeah, and it's like, that's not love. That's not That's not love. I didn't want to be in that kind of relationship.
But you didn't know you were gay at that time?
No, right? I knew I was gay, but I didn't accept it. And so then 2009, so up until, it took me until 2011 before I actually said the words out loud to another person or talked about it with anyone. Because after that engagement, I called off that engagement, I didn't date anyone. I would pretend to go out on dates and like tell people, oh, I'm dating this one, I'm dating that one. But it was all a lie. And so in 2011, when the NBA lockout happened and I didn't have basketball in my life and I didn't have and basketball was that outlet for what everything that I was going through. And when you don't have that, you're like, okay, what's the rest of your life going to look like? And so that was when I came out to the first person I ever, told the words, I'm gay and I don't know. And that was the first time that I actually really accepted it.
What made you accept it, though, other than saying the words out loud?
What made me accept it was, and it happened Thanksgiving weekend. And what made me was sort of like, okay, I have to tell someone, was that I was surrounded by my family and friends, but I felt so lonely. And I felt like even though I was surrounded by people who absolutely love me, but they don't know who I really am. They don't know that I'm gay. And how will they react? I don't know. I think that they're still going to be, but there's no guarantee kind of thing. And but I think the push was that I was at Thanksgiving dinner and just felt alone and didn't have basketball, hadn't dated anyone for 2.5 years and was just absolutely lonely. And so I wrote an email. So that Saturday, I wrote an email to a friend of mine who I knew was gay because he did a video for It Gets Better. And It Gets Better, you can go on YouTube and check them out. But there are LGBTQ folks who do a video basically to a younger version of themselves or to younger people and saying all the struggles that you're going through. Again, it goes back to that suitcase that we all carry around, those common threads. Like, hey, I've been there and telling you it will get better. And his name is Keith Anthony. And when Keith did his, he talked about being from a religious family, very similar to my upbringing as well. So I was like, okay, I think he would be someone who would be receptive. So I sent that email on Saturday after Thanksgiving. And then he didn't reply until Tuesday. So, and then it's interesting. I hit send on that email. And then about an hour later, a friend of mine called me and said that the NBA lockout was over, that the sides have agreed to terms and that the season's going to start back up in a week or 2 weeks. And I was just thinking to myself, oh, that's great. But I just hit send on this email that is probably going to change my life. So when Keith finally did respond a few days later, he said, let's meet up. We met up at a dog park in Los Angeles. And that was the first time that I ever told anyone that, I felt that, that I had these feelings and that I felt that I'm gay. And I don't know, so it was just...
You found someone comfortable you can talk to.
Yes. And take off the mask. And then he said, okay, you got to come out to a family member. Is there someone? And he thought since I'm very close with my brother, that I should come out to my brother. And I said, well, no, there's actually another family member who I think already knows. and it's actually... So the host of that Thanksgiving... dinner that happened, the week before, is my aunt in the San Francisco Bay Area. And after the engagement was called off, and whenever I was, pretending to go out on a date, my aunt would always ask, oh, how's your dating life going? How are they doing? Oh, how are they? She would always use they or them. She would always use gender neutral pronouns when asking how my dating life was going. Hmm. And I knew what she was doing by that, but at the same time...
You didn't accept it.
I didn't want to, yeah. I didn't accept it, and yeah. I didn't... But in the back of my mind, though, I'm thinking, does she know? She knows. Is she onto me? Because who uses gender-neutral pronouns when asking about someone's dating life kind of thing?
Right.
Or like, but... And sure enough, that was her way of, like, I know.
Yeah.
And I'm here when you're ready kind of thing.
Yeah.
So she was the first family member that I came out to.
And, wow. Yeah. It must have felt so freeing.
Yeah. And I was playing for the Atlanta Hawks at the time. So I actually had to leave later that week and got to Atlanta and played that whole half season with only my friend Keith and my aunt Terry knowing the truth. And then I couldn't wait to be able to talk to them when I had, you know, free time.
Yeah.
Because it felt good to, like, be able to not worry about saying something. And then, like, my teammates or coach or, like, somebody figuring out that I'm dead, you know, kind of thing. So I wanted more people in my life who I cared about that I could have these conversations with, which is why I started coming out to – came out to my parents. So that off-season so we're now in 2012, came out to my, you know, family, friends, and those are the kind of people that I have in my life. Or because I never worried about the secret being leaked on TMZ or something like that. With regards to my family and my friends, and the Stanford people, Harvard, yeah. Westlake people, knowing. And then... Yeah, so that's it. But I was able to build up a nice support system when I did. So I was a free agent, got signed to the Boston Celtics, and I had a great support system in Boston.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Was it scary when you came out first day or showing up on court or coming to practice? Was it scary? Did you think you were going to get some weird vibes from your teammates, the crowd?
So coming out, the public, when I got back into the NBA, was in 2014. And that was when everybody knew that I was gay because I'd come out public. No, it wasn't scary. I knew that there was going to be obviously extra media attention. But it's sort of funny. It's like, why you train so hard as a professional athlete is because you might only get one opportunity and you have to be ready to be, you know, thrown into the deep end. And you got to perform. Like, this is it. Like, this is your job. This is what you do. So in order to be ready for what you do, I worked absolutely, you know, this is why you work so hard and why I am always rooting for, like, the veteran when I'm watching, like, sports. Is like, has there been somebody playing over 12 years? Okay, I'm rooting for that person because I know how hard, and it's so much harder the older you get because your body doesn't recover, doesn't want to do this or respond. But I was ready to be thrown into the deep end. So I actually kind of like that. I like challenges. And I again, it's why I work so hard and train so hard.
It felt like it prepared you for this moment, like the aggressiveness on the court and your whole life kind of having that tenacious mentality when you're playing. It kind of really did prepare you to get a little uncomfortable and work with that discomfort and really break through on the court.
Yeah, it definitely did. And at the end of the day, it's basketball. Like, this is something that I've been doing since I was 6 years old.
But it's more than basketball, Jason.
I know. It's more than we have this amazing platform. But can you rebound? Can you set a screen? Can you, you know, block a shot, take a charge? Can you foul? Can you, you know, there are ways. Can you help the team win?
Yeah.
And it's interesting because the word used was like distraction. And it wasn't a distraction. If anything, it brought the team closer together because the team at that point was hovering around 500, give or take. They were a little bit above 500. But in my first 12 games with the Brooklyn Nets, we went 10-2, and that was because everybody rallied. It's like when you see your teammate, you know, going through something, the good teams come together, and the good teams will be there, and like it really makes everybody lock in and focus, and that's what we were able to do. So I got to give a lot of credit to the entire Brooklyn Nets. So that's why, you know, again, wearing the shirt right now.
I love it. Brooklyn. I saw that.
Yeah.
You know, my dad's from Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah. I was just in Brooklyn last week. Absolutely love the Nets organization. I can't say enough good things from ownership all the way to, you know, all the way down the totem pole. It is just an absolutely first-class organization. And so thankful that I was able to play and finish my career with them.
Oh, that's incredible. And what do you think was the most defining moment in your career?
Besides that...
I was going to say, we just kind of dropped the mic there. I don't know if we can beat that one.
I don't know. Yeah, there is that. But also playing in the finals, because I think at the end of the day, it is a team sport. Yes, I was able to accomplish a lot individually, both on and off the court. But with regards to basketball being a team sport, was going to the NBA Finals and playing against Shaq and Kobe my rookie year, and then playing against the San Antonio Spurs and all the Hall of Famers that they have in my second year in the league, and then going to the playoffs. So I played 13 years, so 10 of those 13 years going to the playoffs. And so that means you have to be on a lot of very good teams, a lot of sacrifice being done, not only by yourself individually, but by many people on the team. And so there's a lot of winning.
Such a defining moment. It really is. You have so many defining moments. And you really are what courage looks like. How would you define courage?
Being strong enough to speak your truth. Being strong enough to just walk into a room and know this is who you are and not feel like you have to hide or cover any part that makes you unique. So celebrate everything that makes you who you are. But then also, you know, be proud and as though your grandmother's in the room as well, kind of thing. And like, you're going to make grandma proud as well, kind of thing. So there's something, you know, people want to celebrate. Oh, I want to celebrate this. And it's like, well, will your grandmother be proud of that kind of thing? And my grandmother is very proud of everything that makes me.
I was going to ask you. She
was very, very proud. My other grandmother passed early on. She didn't get to know, I guess, the real me, which is sad. But my other grandmother, my mom's mom, she did get to know the real me. And she, for all those people out there, you just picture an old black woman from upstate Louisiana. She grew up in the segregated South, Jim Crow. And but was very religious, so she had a Bible in one hand and she had a belt in the other. She was very much into discipline. But yeah, so that was my grandmother, and she was so proud of me. And it was interesting. Like I said, we grew up in a family very religious, in part because of her. And she was the family member I was most afraid to come out to because I knew how religious she was.
I was gonna say, yeah.
When she did find out that I was gay, she had nothing but words of love and support and said, Jason, in her mind, religion is about love. Like Jesus, she's Christian, very much like Jesus was about love. And it didn't matter who you were, he was still going to love you and accept you. And it made her angry, my grandmother, angry when people tried to use religion as a way to divide and to separate. So that was, yeah. So for her, Jesus was about love, and that's what she was about, love. So when she found out I was gay, she was like, this doesn't, like, baby, it doesn't matter. Like, wow. This is all about the family unit, and we're all going to be there together.
That must have been such a monumental moment in your life. Yeah. Because I'm sure that was beforehand kind of very fearful to tell her that, considering how religious she is. But the fact that she loves you the way you are and accepts everyone the way they are, I think that's beautiful.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, she was a special lady. She passed on Christmas Day. It's 25th. So that of all the days to pass, Jesus'
really
birthday.
Fit her part.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it fit her brand. And it was funny. Well, it's so interesting. Like I said, everything happens for a reason. When she was in her early 80s, she was diagnosed with stage 4 stomach cancer. And the doctor gave her 6 months to live. And she said, obviously when you get hit with that, you know, she thought, okay, you know, I've in my 80s, at that time, I think her first great-grandchild was born. So she was like, okay, I got to see the birth of my first great grandchild. But you know what? She's like, I got Jesus with me. And I kid you not, she went on to live another 7.5 years. She actually outlived the doctor that gave her the 6 month, like a doctor, like diagnosis. So like, oh. when the doctors, so she went on to outlive that doctor. What? Had to get another doctor. And
are you sure she wasn't like a religious figure on earth? No,
seriously. She was, it was absolutely one of those things where you can't necessarily explain it other than to say, scientifically, I guess you could say, because of her advanced age, the cancer was very, very slow spreading. And actually, if she had been younger when she had it, it probably wouldn't. But, you know, that would be scientifically one way to explain it. But then also, there's also the way of, you know, some things happen for a reason and, you know, God's plan and everything like that.
It sounds like she lived a very fulfilled life.
Oh, yeah. And she got to say, you know, it's interesting. I've had, as I'm sure you have, I don't know if you have, but if you've had family members pass yet, because you're young, I don't know. Yeah. But if you've had family members pass, like sometimes it can be very tragic, very instant. But the way that she passed, even though in the end, yes, the cancer, it did get her, but she got to say goodbye to everybody. And we got to give her, as she said, her flowers. She would say, like, I want my flowers now. It's like we got to have those stories and conversations and say how much we love her and talk about different stories and everything, because we knew that, and especially towards the end when we knew it was coming. And then she really did, because she knew that the family was coming into town on Christmas Eve up into the Bay Area. So we were all there, like she had all generations of family there to say goodbye. And
it was a beautiful way to go.
Yes. And then we get the call, you know, 5, 6 o'clock Christmas morning. It's like she went home kind of thing. And it's like, wow.
Wow, you guys were like,
yeah, goosebumps. Yeah, you're like Jesus.
Was Jesus there too?
Yeah. I think he was.
See one of the flowers here?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
That's the way to go.
And that's so beautiful that she accepted you the way that you are.
Definitely.
Despite how you thought she was gonna react.
Yeah, you never know with religious folk, but
yeah,
she was one of the good ones.
She was. And you're working towards making sports more inclusive for the LGBTQ community. What changes do you feel need to be made? And also, what are you doing now in the community?
So I work for the NBA now. I'm an NBA Cares ambassador. So I work with all of our different corporate community partners that we have and all the amazing events. There's many levels to this. The first thing is education. Imagine that, a guy from Stanford saying education. But there needs to be education that takes place with our players, and then not only in the NBA, but also across all professional athletes. Because there's this language that you've been taught as a male athlete, like use these words to attack another male athlete. And most of those words are sexist or homophobic. So there's a lot of unlearning that needs to happen and awareness for the impact of those words. Because a lot of the guys don't get the impact. They say, and it's interesting because some of the people who I heard use that homophobic language were some of my biggest supporters when I came out, because there's this disconnect in the language that they're using.
They don't
using.
Even realize
they don't
what
realize.
They're
yeah.
saying what it means. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's... And then when I come out, they're like, oh, man, I got your back. And I'm like, well, why'd you say, you know, 2 years ago, I heard you say this. You realize what these words. But anyways, so there needs to be education there.
Yeah.
There needs to be. So for the players, with regards to the franchises, I think every single franchise across all of the sports leagues, the WNBA is already there. The WNBA continues to lead of all of the sports leagues, I think, in this. But having pride, at least at a bare minimum, Pride Night game, something to acknowledge, celebrate the LGBTQ community, not only the community abroad in your sports town you're in, but within your organization, because we're everywhere. LGBTQ people, we're everywhere, kind of thing. So celebrate and encourage people to live their authentic life, to be their best possible version, that they don't have to worry about covering or hiding because we want the best possible version of you so that we can get the best possible work product as well. This is good business kind of thing. But for the leagues, you know, supporting, whether it's different organizations, whether it's Trevor Project, Glisten, Athlete Ally, the list goes on and on of like supporting those LGBTQ plus organizations that are doing great work. So on a national level, but then also on a local level, just like I said earlier, if you're maybe you don't have a center, an LGBT center, but there are different local organizations that the franchises can support.
It's amazing that you've really made it your life's mission.
Well, yeah. And it goes back to, I think, what you said earlier, trying to have a positive impact on someone else that I might not meet kind of thing. So, and recently there was a college kid who came out from an HBCU school. Hmm. So it's cool to see more and more athletes, you know, continue to step forward and, you know, say, this is who I am and I can still play my sport. And
I love that.
Yeah. So
that's incredible. Really. To know what your mission is and know what your passion is in life is not everyone gets to know that. So I think that's really remarkable. Mm. I want to ask you my last and final question, Jason. At Fit Food Junkies, our motto is addicted to health.
Okay.
So what are you addicted to?
I don't know if it's addicted to, but it's just, I really, since 2019, have given up eating red meat and pork.
Huh.
So it started off because I felt horrible. So Brunson, my partner, we were, for my 40th birthday, we went to Australia and New Zealand, and I was eating a wallaby risotto. And as I was eating the it's like, so a wallaby is like, you know, it's like a cuter version of a kangaroo.
Oh,
sorry. I know. It's horrible.
I didn't expect that one.
No, I know. But it was at the time, like, really, I was like, oh, this is so delicious. And then Brunson held up a picture of a wallaby while I was eating the risotto. And I was thinking to myself, I feel horrible now, kind of thing. And so when I said, okay, all right, when I get back to the States, I'm going to give up eating. Like, this is like, I got to atone for this. I'm giving up red meat for like a month. Like, and just, I have to atone for this. I'm so sorry. But it was absolutely delicious, but I'm just, I can't. So then I get back to the States and I give up red meat. And I start to realize my body feels better. This is weird. Yeah. Like, I had really bad inflammation in my knees.
Especially after two surgeries.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've had even that. So I was freshman year.
Let's talk about post-college.
We've had three more since then. But I noticed that the inflammation in my body felt so much better.
Wow.
Like, it just, and I was like, wait. Does this mean I'm going to have to give up eating red meat? But I really like eating. And then the hardest thing was giving up bacon. But then after I got that out of my system and I found Beyond Meat and Impossible, especially Beyond, I love Beyond Meat products. I'm sorry. I don't know if that's a sponsor. Another shout out. Come on, sponsors, come through. But absolutely love. Thank God for that, because like, I don't miss it. I really do not miss it. And my body feels so much better since then. So yeah, no mammals.
So yeah. The addiction is
just trying to respect mammals, I guess. And just trying to commit to eating healthier. Like, I guess as an athlete, you always try to find, because at a certain point, you will start looking at food as fuel.
Right.
And trying to, you know, find the cleanest fuel to put into your body so that the highest performance. But a lot of athletes still eat red meat.
Right.
And then I will find out that some athlete has given up eating red meat. And I'm like, yay! Because I'm not, it's like before I was like,
Just show the kangaroo picture.
Yeah, and... I know.
You're kind of addicted to the way it makes you feel, too.
Yeah. It's like, and I feel like I'm doing better things for our planet, better things for mammals. And especially after seeing videos of like how slaughtering, like, pigs are so smart. And I'm like, no, no more bacon.
And they're so cute, too.
Yeah. I actually have a couple friends who have pet pigs, you know, shout out.
In Austin, I saw someone with a pet pig one time. Yeah, I went to go pet
cute.
It.
Yeah, they're cute. Yeah, so.
Is that your next pet?
So No. I will definitely get another dog. I'm a dog person.
Me too. Yeah. I'm the biggest dog person.
But I think, so my last dog was a German Shepherd. He was absolutely amazing. Shout out. He passed of cancer in May, and I still haven't. But I'm ready now to get another dog.
Yeah.
I am ready.
It helps the healing process.
Yeah. But I don't want to get like a big dog. I want to get a dog that I can like scoop up. Not necessarily like a tiny, because it would look very awkward to have like a super tiny dog.
I
need like something like 20 pounds.
So see you at LAX next time with your dog.
Yes.
They could come on the plane with you.
I just have to pick a cool name. But I got to meet the dog and then
you gotta
the
meet
name.
The dog.
Yeah.
Well, and, like a golden doodle.
That would be cool.
I love golden. I have a golden doodle.
You have a golden doodle?
Yeah.
I like golden doodles.
Yeah. Small, medium size.
Yeah. You can pick it. You can pick the dog up. That's what I need.
That's what I, yeah.
Yes. All right. So, yeah.
I love it. I expect to see you either at Austin Airport or LAX. Next time with your dog. Perfect. First, I won't recognize you because you're 7 feet tall, but I'll just see the dog. I'll be like, there's Jason. Yeah.
And you'll see the fingernails.
There you go. Coolest nails on. He has some Halloween decorations on.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
You know.
You're making me want to do that. I love it. How can people connect with you?
Social media. I guess Instagram. Instagram, Twitter. Yeah. I don't do Facebook that much, but Instagram, yeah. Instagram.
Are you a big Twitter guy?
I love going on Twitter and just seeing kind of what's going on.
I need to get on Twitter. Yeah. Everyone's like...
But don't go down the hole, the rabbit hole. Don't go down. You're like, you look at the edge, you know, you just sort of look around and then you're like, okay, what's going on?
I can't believe how fast people are. Like the second things happen in life, they're already on Twitter.
That's how I found out about Leslie Jordan passing. I was just... going on Twitter and seeing it, it's like, oh my gosh. And
it's so crazy.
Yeah. And Brunson actually, so Brunson's a movie producer. He produced the movie The Help, and Leslie was in the movie. And he was friends with Leslie. And so, yeah, it was very difficult. I mean, for everyone to know, because he was so funny and such a nice guy.
Yeah.
I got to meet him a couple times and just the kindest, sweetest, nicest guy.
Now, maybe I don't want to go on Twitter.
Go on Twitter. You got to see what's going on in the world. But,
yeah,
you know,
no, definitely.
But just don't go. Yeah, don't like click and then go down. Yeah.
Don't
read the comments.
What's next for you in life?
Next for me is going back to LA. I have a doctor's appointment, dermatologist. Make sure you get your cancer screening, okay? So this is... Shout out to, like, living healthy. Even me as a African-American, you know, the sun can still cause damage to us kind of thing. So, I guess that's the biggest thing. It's
like that's next for you.
Next is getting my skin checked. It's
like, okay.
I just did... some events in New York and Miami, spoke at the University of Miami. So doing, a lot of public speaking.
You spoke at USC?
Spoke at Keck School of Medicine.
That's where I graduated from.
Yes.
Yeah. Shout out Keck School.
Yes. Yeah. USC, go Trojans. Yeah.
Fight on.
Yeah. I could give you guys love because back then it was Pac-10.
I know, when we play Pac-12. Stanford, there's no love there.
Yeah. But you know what? I still think, you know, I got a lot of friends from USC.
So. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Well, Jason, thank you so much. It is such a privilege. And I feel like I've known you for so long. Like, we go way back.
It's good energy. No, it's
the best energy.
Yeah.
Jason, thank you so much. I'll see you with your dog at LAX next time.
Oh, maybe Austin.
Or Austin?
Yeah.
I love it. Thank you so much, Jason.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you guys so much for listening today. It's obvious that Jason has such magnetic energy and he is so easy to talk to. I feel like I've known him my whole life. He's one of the most genuine and motivational people that I have ever met. I feel truly honored to have had the opportunity to not only meet Jason, but also interview him. Please share this inspirational podcast with others. I hope it moved you as it has moved me. Connect with Jason on Instagram at JasonCollins_98 and on Twitter at JasonCollins98. Also, let me know on Instagram at FitFoodJunkies what your biggest takeaway was from this episode today. As we're getting close to Thanksgiving, I hope our conversation allowed you to think about what you're grateful for, what gets you up in the morning, what you're passionate about, what inspires you, and what motivates you in life. I'd like to make a shout out to Philosophy Superfoods. They are raw, organic, gluten-free, and vegan. They make high-vibe foods that make your life better on the inside out. They are so delicious. They have green blends, all these different types of superfood mixes. My favorite has been the cacao magic. I can put it in my smoothie in different recipes, and it's so delicious. Use my discount code FFJ30 and try out your favorite superfood blend. You can also check them out on Instagram at Philosophy Love. I'm so excited that you are joining the Fit Food Junkies journey with me.